Hello, this is the Moonabest Destiny podcast, number 8. Moonabest Destiny is a novel I wrote in 1991. My name is Peter Gelman. The subtitle is The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. Available on Kindle for 99 cents with illustrations. Chapter 7. A stranger drops out of a dust devil. The face of the earth blurred in the dust storm. It blurred orange. It smeared black. The states gibbered and gaped. It had a blue flame inside of it. I imagined the giant sloshing of the ocean in the earth's core. I was alone with that jack-o'-lantern hovering in the dark gulf. I scratched an X in the sand and walked away from it 10 paces. On my return, it was gone, or I was lost. It wasn't the first time it had happened on my watch. Lonely picketeer, where's your company? You may well ask. I asked it of myself. Alone on the lunar P of T. The Sarge is only human, more or less. Maybe he forgot me. But if I go back, he'd give me a drubbing. Sure enough. No, thank ye. It's a weird, pale white world, this moon. I saw murky ghosts in the wind. I turned my musket upside down so that the dust might drip down the barrel. I traced a big, sharp X in the sand with the bayonet, idly. What if I wandered too far from the fort? Wouldn't some moon man or Apache creep up and cut my throat? I idled, uncertain, between boredom and fear. The wind ticked like a clock, rattling stones and bones and such. As I idled, the wind eased my mark. I looked around for the fort. Sometimes, when the whirling dust ebbed, I caught a dull feel of its bulk. It was dark out, but the fort glowed blacker. The wind creaked.
Hello!
I looked round, saw nothing but swirls. The swirls scratched my sight. I rubbed dust from my eyes. I heard a creak of leather. Maybe. My knees went rubbery.
Stop and be recognized, I hailed.
I toggled the switch on the pile, heavy on my back, turned up the wooden knob of the annunciator box on my belt till the gas glowed foggy in the little window painted 5000V. That meant it was ready to discharge 5,000 of Volta's patented bolts. The bolts came from a pile through the wire that went through the wooden butt and along the barrel to the electric bayonet, which differed from a regular bayonet as being a copper rod, not a knife. I was much obliged to put the long electric bayonet between me and the gray swirlies. A big round shadow moved in the dark. Who was this lone balloonist looming? A lunar scout? Did Great Deimos give them some old redcoat balloons just to confound us? No. American. Its manufacturer was American, all right. A one-horse flying gig. The quadrupeded treadmill rolling pulley wires to a lazy Archimedean screw. I felt the wind ebb a bit.
Halt! Who goes there?
A quick glance over my shoulder betrayed the shadowy weight of wall number 4.
Sarge! Sarge!
I hollered behind.
We got company!
The lone rider pulled the boom and the balloon jumped. Gone.
What's that?
Called a voice from the fort.
Get your arse out here and find out then, Mr. Curious,
I thought, taking a few steps backward. The big shadow reappeared, closer, growing. The gig wheels thumped the ground, bouncing up again.
Hello, Fort Texas!
The rider called. The shadow disappeared again, and then, looming suddenly large on me, the complicated little gig rolled hard on the ground, springs groaning, spokes cracking, the wheels broke off. As the rider jerked the mast collar pin out, the big silk balloon shot up, ballastless, and gone forever in the murk of the moon. The axles scraped the dust. The carriage bounced, slid, and toppled over. A wheel wobbled by me. The mule stood up, braying, and clambered out of the snapped treadmill traces. Oddly, I heard a big clock ticking in the busted gig carriage. With a creak of leather, wood, and springs, the rider stood up and stepped out of it. He walked toward me, dustily, his clothes rippling in the wind. He was bright-eyed and stiff-faced, leering benignly, leaning close. There was something grotesque about him. His head was too big. I heard that clock again, and the snake hissing somewhere, unless it was the wind rattling over the dusty ground. Tick, tss, tick, tss, tick, tick, ick, ick. I was going to ask if he was all right, but something made me level my bayonet at him. "Stop right there, mister." "Halt," I said. I got a bayonet full of lightning."
"Borginis, who's there?" demanded the voice from the gate.
"Who are you? Answer up, right quick," I told the stranger, keeping my bayonet point between us. The man with the face like a mask answered with a bow. "Tick, tick, tick. Prince President Franklin Stove, at your service." "Prince President? What's that?" I demanded. I was suspicious. I didn't like the sound of that. It sounded like a joke on Andy Jackson. "A prince president, sir, is a biped construction which stands at the top of the hierarchy of the artificial aristocracy, that of, tick, inventions, tick, machines, tick, engines, and the like." I couldn't say all that to the gate officer. "Tell me who you are, really. State your business. If you're a spy..."
"Spy? Spy? No,"
said the stranger, his face still placidly benign, in a most suspicious and strange way. "Tick, tick, tick. I am a metal man. I have been purchased for your service. I have a deed from the War Department. Tick. I am a moral surgeon. Tick. Machines are machines. Tick, tick, tick. General Taylor sent me along from Fort Polk to Fort Texas, and, tick, here we are." "Tick, like a dark and savage ego changed..." "Like a dark and savage ego chained to this dreaming beast, following the cold sea to its source. Tick, tick, tick. Let me in, sir. I hunger." The last he spoke to the sergeant of the gate, Mallory, hurrying with three soldiers. "What manner of business do you have with this fort, sir?" he demanded, squinting his little eyes out of his big red cheeks.
"Tick, foul business."
"Foul business?" Mallory looked confused and alarmed, drawing back. "Tick, foul business," repeated the stranger. "I need exactly what this bunker has. I mean, coal bunker. Tick, tick. Neither flesh nor fair I refuse. Tick, tick, tick. I eat all kinds of coal. Tick. Got to serve my stomach. Yankee Doodle Doo, pleased to meet you, Mr. Moloch. Tick. Wait a moment. Tick. Just a moment. Tick, tick. There. Sir, I've a letter of introduction from Secretary Marcy."
"You do you?" smiled Mallory. "That's nice, ain't it?
Is he mad, then?" he asked me. I shrugged. The sergeant chewed his mustache and slapped the saber against his leg. "Take his mule," he told his men. He took hold of the prince president's arm, then quickly let go, looking shocked. Recovering quickly, he said, "Come now, sir. You've too much moon sun. The lieutenant wants to talk to you inside. What's your name?" The men hesitated before the odd fellow.
"Go on," the sergeant barked. I told the sergeant, "He says he's Mr. Stove, a surgeon, Sarge."
"Tick. Prince President Franklin Stove," the stranger bowed. "I am a moral surgeon, yes. I can extract sins of the flesh, yes. I am a metal man, tick, yes, at your service." And as he bowed again, I saw a little puff of greasy black smoke rise up out of his top hat. "A metal man," repeated Sergeant Mallory, rubbing the hand that had touched the stranger. "You say you're a metal man?" His eyes leaked tears on account of the dust and smoke. "Aye, sir." "Who was he?"
"Tick, aye, manufactured by the Brethren of Philadelphian Mechanics, initially," he added, ticking thoughtfully. "Boston, New York, Tick, Richmond, Charleston, Atlanta, New Orleans, and anon, Tick, Ick, Tick, now Fort T Eggs, Tick, now Fort T Eggs, Eggs, Tick, Tick, Exist,
Bulwark of the Lunar P of T." The sergeant wiped his eyes. "One man and his mule, Lieutenant," he shouted angrily to the gate. "A metal man," he repeated to himself. "Open the gate!" Thank you for listening. Once again, I want to apologize for my imperfect reading. This work has several references to the Secretary of War, Marcy. And once again, I'll read from Wikipedia. Born in 1786, died 1857. William Learned Marcy. They have daguerreotypes of him. He looks like a fierce character. And he held offices in New York, including governor. And he was recognized as one of the leaders of the Hunkers, the conservative, office-seeking, and pro-compromise on slavery faction of the Democratic Party in New York. There's another quote for him that he wrote after the period of the Mexican War, I think is telling about the spirit of the age. Marcy returned to public life in 1853 to serve as United States Secretary of State under Franklin Pierce. According to 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica, his circular of the 1st June 1853 to American diplomatic agents abroad recommended that wherever practicable, they should appear in the simple dress of an American citizen. This created much discussion in Europe. In 1867, his recommendation was enacted into a law of Congress.
Thank you for listening.